welcome to the Most Excellent 80s Movies Podcast. It's the podcast where a filmmaker, a comedian, and their fabulous guests have got it all, on UHF, which is the movie that we're talking about from 1989, about which Google says, after losing yet another job, George, played by Weird Al Yankovic, wonders if there's any career that can handle his outrageous personality. When George's uncle, played by Stanley Brock, hands him the deed to a local TV station, George creates a series of television shows based on social satire and his hyperactive humor, with the help of his best friend Bob, played by David Bowe. However, a rival station's bitter CEO, played by Kevin McCarthy, tries to destroy George's wacky programming, forcing him to fight back. And that's UHF. I'm Chrissy Lenz, one of the directors at the Neighborhood Comedy Theater in downtown Mesa, Arizona. And with me, as always, is
Nathan Blackwell, a filmmaker, independent filmmaker with Squishy Studios.
And joining us today is returning guest. You might have remembered him from our exploits at Tucson Comic Con talking about Supergirl. It's our friend Jared Washburn.
Let's also not forget he was also in Dune. In fact,
Dune.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Dune. One of my faves.
Nathan and I are doing it again tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Oh, I saw it last night.
Oh my gosh, don't spoil the ending.
Okay, I won't. Guys, there's lots of sand.
Yeah, Jared and I are seeing it in IMAX tomorrow, so we're looking forward to it.
Ooh, an IMAX, how fancy.
Uh-huh. Ooh,
yeah, we're gonna 70 millimeters.
We're going to wear suits and those hats that you wear when you get on the IMAX.
We're going to pull the classic tall man in a trench coat maneuver and get in with one ticket.
Oh, that's a spicy move. Right. You are both an 11-foot man.
Yeah, an 11-foot man in a trench coat.
One for Dune, please.
Yeah.
Well,
that's pretty exciting.
I think seeing Dune in IMAX couldn't be more the opposite of talking about seeing UHF on a little VHS tape.
Did you see it on VHS? That's kind of the perfect
I saw it my whole life on VHS. VHS? Am I saying that right? Is that what it's called?
Yes, VHS.
Oh. It sounded so wrong to my ear.
You saw it on VHS, on a VCR.
On a VCR, on a TV. Mm-hmm. And other letters as well.
I was trying to remember if we had it on a VHS or a digital video disc. And I think it was just DVD.
I read that the VHSs were very rare and prized because they didn't print very many. So if you had one, it was a prized possession.
And you were respected in the schoolyard.
My mom's pile.
Yes, that's how you got your street cred. I got Weird Al on VHS. Okay, so this was a childhood favorite of mine. I loved this movie from day one. Huge Weird Al fan. I'm guessing it's probably the same story for you two, but just checking in to make sure.
Yeah, I feel like 90, like I've probably seen this, you know, a dozen times. And I think 11 of those times were between, you know, the ages of, you know, whenever this came out, when I was like 12, 13 or something like that, to the age of like 15. so all within that zone.
Perfect window.
Yeah, exactly.
So you were coming into it with fresh adult eyes.
Yeah, it's probably been a few decades since I've seen this movie.
I made my wife watch it 5 years ago, at least.
Before the wifening?
Well, I guess, within the last recently. Yeah, because I'm constantly quoting it, and nobody's going to know where those references are from, so.
Yeah, I have hosted forced screenings of this for my kids and friends.
Excellent. What's the review from Rocket?
He loves it. He saw that I was watching it today, and he was like, oh, you're watching the Weird Al movie?
Weird Al's back, you know?
Weird Al's back in a big way.
Yeah. Starring Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's fabulous. Weird the Al Yankovic story is terrific.
Yeah, a huge fan. Yeah, Weird Al was my first musical concert experience.
Wow. It was my kids as well. I purposely made it so that Weird Al would always be their first concert.
That's some forethought.
I'm curating their lives.
Just barely.
Yes. Okay, so we start the whole thing with a parody, an Indiana Jones parody, where you instantly know what you're in for, because we get the whole moody, oh, we're just seeing his back, we're not going to see his front. It's a very Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then all of a sudden he whips the guy's entire arm falls off. And you're like, okay, I know what this is now. This is going to be some really broad, ridiculous humor. Yeah. And it proceeds to be. As a big fan of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Nathan, what did you think about the opening parody?
I thought it was good.
Oh, good.
It was acceptable. As a park ranger, I could not get over all the signs that he was walking past, because nobody in my world reads signs. Just keep going.
Yep, you can't. He walks past all the signs without regarding their safety content.
Yeah.
And then it turns out he's just flipping burgers, you know, and he's all part of the narrative that someday everyone's going to be sorry that they fired George Newman because he's a visionary and he's got dreams. But Big Edna fires them.
Mm-hmm.
And that
bodily
sort of
tosses them out the front door. One of my favorite tropes.
Yes, taking them by their ears, doesn't she?
I'll take it.
Yeah. And so we get the information that these guys get fired a lot. They've had a lot of jobs. They're always getting fired because George is always daydreaming his whimsical imaginations, and that's what gets him fired all the time. Then we get the Twinkie Wiener sandwich, which have you ever tried that, guys?
Negative.
A Twinkie with a hot dog inside with Cheese Whiz on the top?
I may have blocked it from my memory. It seems like a thing I would try, but I do not recall.
No, I recommend it.
Apparently, according to the Amazon X-ray trivia, he had to eat so many of those for that shot that he went vegetarian immediately after.
Yeah. Well, I understand. So poor Bob is just like there with George all the time. He goes to a party with his auntie, and his uncle is like a gambler. His uncle's like a rambling gambler and has somehow won the deed to channel U62 in his gamblings. And the auntie, who just loves George so much, insists that they give George the management of the station and give him an opportunity to run this little UHF station.
As he's trying to give the water, the dog punch out of the punch bowl.
And he drops the dog right into the punch bowl.
Yes.
Yeah, this movie really, I mean, revisiting it, you really get a sense that this was a labor of love for them. Like, no one was asking for this movie.
Nope.
No one was happy that they delivered this movie, but they were. Gosh darn it.
Yes, they were here to make the movie they were here to make. And I think that's part of what makes it so special, is because there were no sort of expectations. Like, the bar was really low.
Yeah, it's a labor of love, and they got to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah, set Weird Al loose and see what happens.
Yeah, and I think what happens is pretty special, and it all flies at you pretty quickly. So they go down to the station to check it out at night, and they find Philo, the mad scientist, in his like weird mad science chamber, and he's like the chief engineer. But they go in the next day and find Fran Drescher, who's the secretary but wants to be in news.
Mm-hmm.
We quickly learn who the villain is. She's having a very angry time. She's mad that there's always a new boss.
She should probably join a union with all of her grievances.
Yes, it's true. You think UHF has a union?
Well, I was mostly just trying to crack a joke about Fran Drescher being head of the actors union.
Of course.
Yeah, sorry.
She's come a long way.
Joke failed.
Hey, I'm if we're talking about joke fails, like I'm still upset on the Last Crusade episode where Elsa is trying to reach for the Holy Grail and she falls in, and I said, "Oh yeah, Elsa just couldn't let it go." On Frozen.
Womp, womp.
No womp, one picked my Frozen womp, joke. Womp, womp, womp.
We just weren't in a Frozen maybe we state leave, of mind.
Look, life
maybe
is
we should leave the jokes to the comedian.
No, never.
UHF has taught us one thing: is life is full of regret.
Oh, that's so true. Full of regret. That's the main takeaway from UHF: is all the regret.
It's the regrets that we made along the way.
Yeah. So we immediately meet the bad guy when George takes a package over to Channel 8, which is the big station, the network affiliate, and RJ Fletcher is so mean. We meet him yelling at his own son for not bringing him a number 2 pencil. And we get to see him fire Michael Richards as Stanley Spadowski, the janitor, for losing a file that was in his chair the whole time. So yeah. Instantly, he's incredibly mean to George. And they steal Stanley's mop. Stanley, the janitor. They steal his precious mop, even though he's like, I had that mop. I brought it from home.
They'd never been apart since it was given to him at 8 years old.
So George hires Stanley Spadowski. The next day, we get Fran Drescher doing the news with Noodles McIntosh.
Billy Barty!
And the Rubik's Cube gag with the blind man.
Yeah. Is this it? Nope.
Is this it?
Nope. The Channel 8 guy trips Noodles and says to Fran Drescher, broads don't belong in broadcasting. Shocking.
How did you feel as a woman? How did you feel about that?
I hated it. As much as I love alliteration and wordplay, I can't get behind broads don't belong in broadcasting.
I think you were meant to hate it. I think it was meant to be hated.
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't think that's just a matter of it not aging well. I think it legitimately is just bad form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that guy, he's like straight out of one of those like Revenge of the Nerd movies.
Yeah,
in fact, he probably has been in a couple of them. Daddy.
So this movie is very episodic. The next thing we get is town talk with Emo Phillips cutting off his own thumb. Just call me Mr. Butterfingers, and then a commercial for Spatula City. Spatula City. When we did a screening of this, Spatula City, we sell spatulas. And that's all.
He liked the company so much he bought it.
This movie, I mean, back then, there really wasn't a ton. Like, Saturday Night Live had a couple, but there really wasn't anything on this level in terms of like commercial parodies. You know, and so that's really like one of the things that does as a kid, I really kind of latched onto were all the different vignettes, all the different like fake commercials that they did, like Conan the Librarian and Spatula City one. Like those were the things you remember, like the whole structure of the story. You know, like, does anyone really learn a lesson? Does he like use the power of his? Like, it feels like the character we start off with, Weird Al, in the beginning is kind of like gone as soon as he's got a TV station. He's just Weird Al, you know? It's kind of like, let's give Pee-wee a movie, you know? And so it's just him running loose. But it's like these little fun bits and gags and scenes that make it memorable.
You don't buy a car in the next hour, I'll club this baby seal. Because I'm Crazy Eddie.
It really worked for me as a kid, like where I didn't care about the narrative structure and I wasn't worried about a plot to like help me get through this movie. I was just watching his daydreams drift into commercial parodies, into mm-hmm. some semblance of a plot, and fine with me.
That's the thing, as a kid, like you're even your attention is not necessarily like wrapped for the whole like 90 minutes or so. Like you're in and out whether or not you're sitting in front of the TV or not. And so this was like a perfect kind of kids movie because you could kind of come in and out and enjoy it and it doesn't detract from the experience.
Right. Because absolutely. Super episodic. The next thing we get is George inviting his girlfriend Terry, Victoria Jackson, to dinner via the TV channel. Like, she's a dental hygienist and he comes on the TV channel and invites her to dinner. Then we get another commercial parody, Plots Are Us. Then we get a whole dream sequence of a music video about the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, which wasn't that already existing, like, music video of his?
Yes.
Or was that? Yeah.
Yeah. So he has slept through his dinner with Terry after learning that his TV station is probably going to go bankrupt by the end of the week. And Terry breaks up with him. Yeah. The next day, he's too depressed to do Uncle Nutsy's Clubhouse. So he gives Stanley Spadowski the show. And within the time it takes for them to walk to the bar and order blueberry daiquiris, the show has become a runaway hit.
Hey, turn it on! Turn it on! Like, they're already, like, dyed-in-the-wool fans at this point. You know?
And it's like a biker bar that they walk to. And everyone's like, he's back on, everybody! It's Stanley Spadowski!
Yeah.
And people love him.
His passionate speech about how these floors are dirty as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
But as soon as Stanley Spadowski's show takes off, the station is finally making money. And this allows George to create some new shows, including Wheel of Fish, which I read used real fish. So they were shooting the Wheel of Fish with real stinky, smelly, rotting fish.
Fred Snapper.
You want the red snapper or what's in the box? There's nothing in the box. You're so stupid. Secrets of the Universe with Philo, where he teaches people how to make uranium plutonium. Out of plutonium. That's right. Out of common household objects. We get Rahul's Wild Kingdom, where neither one. He's trying to teach poodles to fly.
And we learn what nature's suction cups are.
Turtles.
Yes.
And neither George nor Bob hired that guy.
Right.
We just sort of kind of showed up on the station.
He does get a fun joke, though, where the animals are showing up for the next day and he's like, badgers? We don't need no stinking badgers. Come on.
Silly Jared. It's like he's, you know, that joke, you hear it as a kid in cartoons and things like that, but I guarantee, like, no kid gets the reference. It's for the adults. And even then, it was a 40-year-old reference to the Treasure of Sierra Madre.
Which nobody knows. Nobody knows what it's from.
Now, right, exactly.
And I don't know what the reference was from until today.
Yeah, and now it's like a 75-year-old reference.
But it still works. You can still do that joke in an improv show and the grown-ups will laugh.
It's part
badges,
of the zeitgeist.
We don't need no stinking badges. It's just something that people have heard. Stanley Spadowski's show is a hit. There's a scene where a kid finds the marble in the oatmeal and gets to drink from the fire hose. It's one of the most memorable moments. We get Conan the Librarian.
That's my personal favorite.
Won't you know the Dewey Decimal System? Yeah, that one is classic.
And all of a sudden, UHF, channel U62, is number one in the ratings.
And I feel like, so, I mean, the idea that the janitor is like the the runaway hit kid show host. We kind of buy it because, darn it all, like, Michael Richards crushes it, you know, like, yeah, it is a stupid idea, you know. It's a dumb idea, but Michael Richards, like, I, you know, honestly, like, if you had put anyone else in it, he just totally crushes it with this inadvertent charm that he has, which just 1 year, it's like, you know, like 1 year later, he would be Kramer in Seinfeld, you know, and he just totally, I can't imagine it even working at all if it was anyone else, you know?
You completely agree with that. And I think that, you know, one of the many reasons Seinfeld worked is because Kramer was such a beloved oddball character, and Michael Richards, whatever else he may be, he does have this goofy
unhinged quality.
Yes, which really is appealing. And I think it works in this, even though he looks like a tiny, tiny baby.
Yeah, I looked up how old Weird Al was in the hamburger scene, because I was like, man, he looks so young. 30 years old.
Wow. Yeah. And because this movie failed so spectacularly, he went into a slump for years and didn't put out anything for like 3 years after this movie. And his next big hit was the Nirvana parody, Smells Like Nirvana.
Jeez.
Yeah, so from 1989 to like 1992 or 93, he just didn't put anything out because people didn't love UHF the way he thought they would. But give it time, Weird Al. We brought it back as a cult classic.
It'll age like a fine wine.
Yes, it will. It'll become an obsession of kids exactly our age who are now adults who show it to their kids.
And make podcasts
about it.
We are the demographic.
We are. So now the gambling uncle comes back into the story. Big Louie, his, I don't know, gambling henchman.
Right. Mysterious pseudo Orson Welles.
He's the bookie. Like,
the Dr. He's Claw the bookie. Character.
Yes. Dr. Claw is exactly right, because we never see his face. We just see him screw off his hand and put a cleaver into it and chop a salami irresponsibly. But Big Louie calls the uncle and says he's just lost at the track and he's got $75,000 due at the end of 2 days. And so he's got to get that money. Luckily, RJ Fletcher is the next phone call to the uncle. And he's like, $75,000 to buy the UHF station, I'll do it. So RJ Fletcher is going to turn the U62 office into a parking lot.
Right.
And now we have a plot.
I did the math. $75,000 is $186,000 in today's currency.
That seems like a reasonable amount to buy a TV station, don't you think?
Yeah, it's about like a UHF station.
If such a thing existed, that would be like buying someone's YouTube channel.
Right. And kids today, I mean, I barely know, but kids today don't know what a UHF, what is a UHF channel?
No. Kids don't know what a TV channel is.
Right. They don't know what a VHS channel is.
They barely know what Netflix versus Hulu versus Amazon Prime is. Right. You know,
I find I describe it like AM versus FM, but even that is not on the radar either, you know?
Right. The kids don't know anything about that. They just think of something they want to see and they call it up and they see it.
Yeah. So this is really us just angry at kids.
It's true.
My lawn.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So now I feel like I don't actually know, because I always thought that like Channel 61 was the UHF station here. Am I totally off base there?
So
like there was channel like 3 through 12 that were actual stations, and then anything after that was the UHF.
Well, as far as I understand it, it was and. Now suddenly being on a podcast, we have to pretend like we're experts. It felt like a lower distance, more local TV station. Like the main channels were all on one level. It was like, oh, we're going to watch channel 3. We're going to watch, you know, PBS on channel 8. oh, we'll watch Fox on Channel 10, etc. And then there was the UHF channels, which were these high weird numbers, and you never knew what was on there, like public access or like, you know, like ministry services and things like that on the weird
or the UHF Spanish language channel local. Where you can watch Predator and not realize it's the Spanish language channel.
Right, exactly.
I watched all of Predator until the ads, and I was like, wait a second, this is all in Spanish. Because there's this so much dialogue that Predator in Predator
transcends words.
Yes.
Or just
transcends language. But yeah, the UHF would be the local, the odd programming, your Wallace and Ladmos, things like that, you know, stuff that would be like, oh, you never saw blank the clown? No, because that wasn't in our local programming frequency.
Right.
So that way you can get a show like Wheel of Fish and it doesn't have to appeal nationally.
And the name UHF, which I think the studio picked, they had a lot of trouble with that on foreign markets because they didn't have the same thing either. You know, they didn't have the VHF and the UHF designation. So it didn't mean anything. The name UHF didn't mean anything to them. So it had a bunch of different names in foreign markets. The one I liked the most was Mexico. The movie was called The TV Crazies.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
The TV Crazies.
Mm-hmm.
It should have just been called The Weird Al Movie. You know, yeah, Pee-wee's movie is called Pee-wee's Playhouse. It should have just been called The Weird Al the Movie.
Right. Or like the Weird Al Channel, you know, something like that.
I think The Vidiot is what it was he wanted it to be called.
Right. Which was not great either.
No. It didn't feel like it
was solid. Take it.
It's a solid B+.
Acceptable. Yeah, it's an acceptable name.
So the plot is launched that George now has until Friday night to raise $75,000 so that he can buy the station. So they decide to do a telethon and sell shares for $10. And it's going great until Stanley Spadowski gets kidnapped. And he annoys all the kidnappers by trying to play 20 questions with them. So they put him in a closet. He's just driving them crazy. They want to kill him so bad. And he's just like, I'm thinking of something orange. Do you give up? It's an orange. He's like that kid that won't show up. Then we get two different sketches while all of this is happening, including the one where Town Talk has become the Geraldo show. And Gandhi 2, which is probably
Gandhi 2 is the other writer, isn't it? The guy that wrote the movie with Weird Al, Levy or something, was the actor that plays Gandhi in that.
Oh, is it really? Boo. That part definitely doesn't hold up. So throughout the movie, there's this guy who keeps coming up and asking for change. He asks RJ for change, and RJ gives him one penny, but he's really excited about it for some mysterious reason that will possibly come into play later. Terry goes to see RJ Fletcher, and he goes on a rant about how the community means as much to him as a flaming bowl of dog snot. Unbeknownst to him, Philo has been spying on him this whole time with his scientific shenanigans, which I think now the concept of being spied on is pretty de rigueur because we're all being spied on constantly by our own devices. But in 1989, it wasn't so easy to just spy on somebody from a space satellite. So you got to give props to Philo.
We had to drill a hole in the ceiling with a camera the size of a muffler.
Stanley sees his beloved mop, and he breaks out of captivity, only to be recaptured again. George imagines he's Rambo and tries to rescue Stanley in a pretty funny Rambo parody.
Yeah.
Which I didn't understand how perfect a parody it is until I saw Rambo for this podcast.
Would we have to talk for a moment, like, You know, so we've got the silly stuff. We've got the parodies. There's some degree, they're kind of in the same zone, like the airplane movies, like the Abram Zucker movies, and them. And Weird Al's form of parody, which he does in his own songs, you know. His are a little different. I feel like Weird Al's parodies are just a little sharper than the stuff you'd see like an Airplane. Like or like, you know, maybe not specifically Airplane, but some of the other stuff that Zaz has done, or some of these other filmmakers that have done. And I'm not entirely sure what it is. I feel like with some of these parodies, there's almost like a pause. Get it, you know, or like one of the characters is kind of in on the joke. In this, like, they don't break that character. Like, he's still, like, when he plays Indiana Jones and he plays Rambo, like, he is wordless, you know? He's more of a cartoon character who is kind of playing a version of those characters and doesn't break it, you know?
Right. He's sincere and committed.
Yeah. And I'm not entirely sure I've articulated myself well on this, but yeah, it's just a little different. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
You can taste the love. He definitely has. You can smell that he really loves Rambo and Indiana Jones in it, and I think that's really a big difference too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I think Weird Al has this sort of magical quality that not many people have, to really disappear into whatever it is that he's parodying, and most of the time it's songs, it's music, right? So he's really giving us whoever he's parodying, whether it's Coolio or Nirvana or whatever, he really gets the essence of what the song is and what makes it funny.
Mm-hmm.
But
and he's still playing a character, you know?
Yes.
That's the thing. It's like he's playing a version of himself, but even within those parodies, he's playing a character. So I think that's one of the things that kind of works for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of why his parodies in the movie work so well, is because he's really disappearing into them, and he's going into it with so much sincerity and love of the product he's parodying. Like, he's not making fun of it. He's making fun with it.
Yeah.
He's not laughing at the thing he's parodying. He's laughing with the thing he's parodying.
Well, because the idea of Weird Al as Rambo is so ridiculous anyway that it's funny on its own.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He when he does Rambo and Indiana Jones, and then also like the Town Talk Geraldo Rivera character, he's playing it totally straight.
Yes. He's playing it with 100% earnestness. He's acting. He's not joking.
Right.
And that's why he deserves that Oscar that he tried to steal in the beginning.
Yeah. He'll get one someday. So Staley and George are finally able to break free when all of their karate friends come bursting out of a supply closet shouting, "Supplies!" in another joke that doesn't age well.
I feel like it's done with a lot of love, and I'm going to give him a pass.
I'm not. Not on that one. Not on Gandhi 2 and not on the supplies joke. So Channel 8 has been destroyed. Stanley gets back and he is rallying the crowd. RJ, the end takes a really long time. A lot of stuff happens. RJ still shows up and he's trying to disuse, or RJ goes on TV and he's like, "People of this community, you need to know what the dangers are of a little UHF station taking over our airwaves." And Philo cuts in and plays the festering bowl of dog snot rant. And so RJ has to run away. The uncle shows up. Big Louie needs the money now. RJ has the money but wants to make a statement. George gets $2,000 from the, hey, can you spare any change guy? He gives all the money to Big Louie, and the station is ours. Uncle signs the papers. We've won. The telethon has worked. But the movie's not over yet. It's going to keep going. Channel 8 gets busted by the FCC and gets taken off the air. Philo goes back to his home planet of Sarkon. Stanley gets a trophy with a little mop. And the guy who asked for change got a Rolex. And then the final parody is a Gone with the Wind ending where she says, let's get married tomorrow, because tomorrow is another day. And he says, I knew she was going to say that in a joke that never made sense to me as a kid. And still isn't that funny.
It still doesn't
as an adult.
Make sense to me. Right. It feels like I'm just asking for things to be explained this whole podcast. So.
Yeah, it's from Gone with the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
It's silly. Yeah.
But he doesn't say, I knew she was going to say that in Gone with the Wind.
No.
So he's just making a meta reference that, hey guys, we're referencing Gone with the Wind?
Yes.
Yep. That's all right. It is.
I have hopped on the bus.
Yay.
Yay.
Let's go.
But one of the things I love about this is that, like, George is, as a character, is like so into giving people what they want and letting their dreams come true that the next time we see Fran Drescher, after the first time she complains that she's supposed to be doing the news, she's doing the news. He like immediately is like, okay, you want to do the news? You get to do the news. Like, he's not into holding people back. He's into letting them reach their fullest potential and live their best lives.
Yeah. That's really his only character trait.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, yeah, there's not really a journey. If anything, it's like we talked about this before. It's like, some movies, like, the main character doesn't really learn anything per se, but he changes other people around him, you know? So he's kind of like Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins doesn't really learn a lesson, you know?
No, she already knows the answer.
She may be overcoming an adversity, but she's the one that's changing other people's lives. And so he's kind of like the Mary Poppins, to where just by existing and having this optimistic outlook and being a dreamer, he's, you know, and then having an opportunity with the TV station, he's changing everyone else's lives.
Yeah.
Boy, does Big Edna regret throwing him out the front door. She could have used that level of energy in the Burger Shack.
Well, his thesis statement that he said at Big Edna's was true, that everyone would be sorry that they fired him. He just needed to find the right niche for his unique imagination. Mm-hmm. And find it he did on the UHF station. We know it would not be to last, though, because how long did it take before TV became cable?
Yeah, their TV station was shut down in 2 years.
Yeah, he got to live his dream for 2 years, and then he had to like figure out how to become a cable access, a Wayne's World type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I find this movie really hard to rate because in my heart, it's a 10.
Uh-huh.
And I know it's not a 10.
Right.
So it's really tough to like, because with my adult eyes, I still love this movie as much as I ever did. And I think with those like two little exceptions, I think it really holds up. And my evidence of that is that my kids think it's funny.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That's a huge deal. And this really is, I mean, if like there's a Venn diagram, it's almost perfectly overlaid into the people who like Weird Al's music, you know?
Right.
It's full on, like, right on top of it. There's no, very little deviation. And so if you like the on-the-nose silliness and goofiness and parody that he does, then you like this movie. If you find, like, you like a couple of the songs but are not totally into it, then you're that's probably the reaction you're gonna have on the movie. You know,
it's yeah, you're gonna be bored of the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't take anything serious. You know, there's you know, there's it's just really a platform for a lot of jokes. It's a joke and parody delivery system.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is a lot like Pee-wee's Playhouse, which is like also a beloved cult classic that people of our generation enjoy and that my kids also find funny. But I think it's really like interesting because like my kids have seen Rambo and they've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. So they understand what those parodies are. And even though they don't have any reference to what Geraldo is, they still think it's funny to see the whole sex with furniture. What's your take? And see him get hit in the face with a chair. You know, so if they ever learned what Geraldo is, they would understand right. because they've seen the Weird Al parody.
Or Gone with the Wind and the Treasure of Sierra Madre.
Yes, exactly. Which is like, I think my kids learned a lot of music from listening to Weird Al, and then they'd hear the real song and be like, oh, I didn't realize. This is a Weird Al song.
This is a parody of a Weird Al movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael Jackson parodies his song.
So on a scale of one Twinkie Wiener sandwich to 10 Twinkie Wiener sandwiches, which is the best number of Twinkie Wiener sandwiches. What do you give it, Nathan?
Oof. I'm totally where you are to where it's my heart says one thing and my mind says something else. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to give it I think I'm going to split the difference and give it a nostalgic 7.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think that's a fair rating. It's a little low, I think, but fair.
I shall say no more or I jeopardize friendships.
No. Our friendship can take it. We're made of sterner stuff. We've disagreed before. What do you think, Jared?
I also gave it a 7 for much the same reasons. I think it just makes you feel love and warm in your heart. So you're much more generous with it than you probably ought to be, but it's a solid film.
It's like eating a Happy Meal, you know?
Yeah, it's not good, but you love it.
Okay, I think you're both wrong. I give it an 8.5.
Okay.
I'm going to give 11? It a full 1.5 point of Twinkie Wiener hot dog sandwiches more than you two have given it.
Jared, is she gaslighting us?
I am.
I'll take it. Yeah.
Yes, I am. I want to bring you over to my way of thinking.
All right, continue.
Okay. So what about a deep cut recommendation? If you like UHF... You know, I think there's so many really great obvious recommendations. Like, I totally recommend the Weird Al movie. You know, Weird, the Al Yankovic story is a treasure not to be missed. You know, of course I want to recommend all of Weird Al's music. But those aren't really deep cuts, are they?
No.
Yeah, I
had a hard time.
Yeah, you totally like dipped a toe into my recommendation, which was Wayne's World.
No, that's mine.
Okay, I'll do Wayne's World too. So okay. here's the other ones I thought of, which were like Hot Shots Part 2 or Do.
Part 2.
Or Top Secret. Even Real Genius has some degree of overlap. But yeah, now. Then let us speak together then. Okay. Yeah, I thought of Wayne's World too, not just because of the TV broadcast thing, but just the level of silliness and parody that Wayne's World has. It's been a while since I've revisited Wayne's World, but I just found it the level of silliness and parody just delightful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, to me, and this is maybe a bit of a diss on UHF. I felt it was the next generation. It was the upgrade to the experience that I had with UHF.
Oh, interesting. I didn't feel like that. I didn't feel like it was an upgrade to the UHF experience, but I likened it to my UHF experience because I did watch it with my 13-year-old son, Rocket, and he loved Wayne's World, surprisingly. Like, I thought Wayne's World would be way more dated, way more sort of over his head, and it still was. It's a lot more adult than UHF.
Yeah, and that's probably why I felt that way, because I was at that point like in high school when I saw Wayne's World. And so for me, it felt like it was slightly more sophisticated or emotional. I mean, still, we're talking Wayne's World being sophisticated and adult in comparison to UHF.
Right. Yes, but he still loved it, and he still wanted to watch it again, and he wanted to watch the sequel. So I think it does hold up in that way, in spite of being more dated and of its time, whereas I think UHF is somewhat timeless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it chooses to parody timeless things. Wayne's World is still, I think, a good pick and a useful movie to go back and watch if you're feeling a bit nostalgic. I think it holds up pretty okay. So that's why I wanted to recommend Wayne's World, based solely on, like, these guys have their own TV show and they're silly too.
All right, Jared, why do you like Wayne's World?
I also love Wayne's World. I wasn't expecting to be talking about Wayne's World right now. But
what's your recommendation?
Product placement gags, A+. I had a real hard time with my recommendations. I came up with like four, and none of them I was super stoked with. But I think I'm going to go with Empire Records.
Ooh!
It's kind of a similar idea. The record store is going to be taken over, and so they have to save the record store. I don't remember a whole ton about the movie besides that, and that the band Gwar plays a pivotal role in it. And I feel like Gwar and Weird Al are about on the same level of quality of music, but like I will defend them to the death about how much I love them.
Okay.
You're wrinkling your nose about quality. I guess it's I think you have to be there for Gwar. I think you have to like physically be hosed down with blood in order to have the Gwar love.
Let me write that down.
Yeah,
that's I guess put that on my to-do list.
I guess that's my deep cut recommendation: is go get hosed down by Gwar.
By Gwar. I love Empire Records, and I love the responding to the like, we've got to save the station, we've got to save the record store energy. Great, that's awesome. Excellent work. We did it, you guys.
My other deep cut was originally just going to be the store Archie McPhee that sells rubber chickens and totally ridiculous things.
It's but a what? It's a store?
Less... Yeah, Archie McPhee.
I don't know what it
is. They have hander pants and like Sasquatch everything and the rubber chicken museum and just like the goofiest things that you never knew that you needed and probably still don't. But Archie McPhee, it's great.
I'm going to Google it right now. Archie McPhee? It's a physical store or it's online?
It was always a mail order thing when I was a kid, I think. But they have a physical store in, like, Oregon or something.
They have an Amazon store. Oh, it's just showing me Archie Comics.
McPhee is with a PH, by the way.
Oh, I found it. It's at McPhee.com.
Seattle.
There's an axolotl riding in another axolotl. There's little statues of spiders wearing crowns. There's squids doing yogas. Yes, I'm delighted that you've turned me on to this.
Excellent.
I'll be shopping here frequently. Rubber chickens, visit our Seattle store. Fried chicken candy, ketchup candy, pizza candy. A squishy armadillo. Yes, I love it. Okay, perfect. Now I know where I'm going to buy all my Christmas presents.
You mean Karate Mart?
Yes, I do mean Karate Mart. Wonderful. Jared, what do you want to plug? What do you want people to go out and experience in the world in the name of Jared Washburn?
As always, I would like to plug stay hydrated and hike safely. Yes. But I think also this week, it being spring break, just email your professors if you're having a hard time. Don't wait until the last day of class to say that your life has been miserable for the past semester. Do it now. Today is the day to reach out and say, I'm having a hard time. We can expand that to a broader, not just your professor. Tell somebody in your life if you're having a hard time.
Your metaphoric professor that you're having problems with. Your metaphoric class.
Yeah.
We all have El Wapos in our life, but everyone's personal El Wapo.
That's perfect. That's good advice. Good advice up and down on all around. Nathan, where can people support you in your filmmaking endeavors?
Yeah, so the squishystudios.com is still the, I know we never update it, but it has the link to all the stuff, and so that's just the easiest thing. If you want to check us out on Facebook or Instagram, the links are there.
Yeah, I recommend it. There's a lot of good quality video linkage there. And you can support me by visiting the physical place, the Neighborhood Comedy Theater, if you're in downtown Mesa, Arizona. Or you can support me in the realm of audio and podcast love by becoming a member of this podcast on truestory.fm. Just shoot on over to truestory.fm, find our little podcast pagey, click on become a member. It only costs $5 a month. You get all your episodes early. Ooh, and ad free.
Can I add it into my Spotify stream?
You absolutely can.
How do I
can.
Get them early?
You have to become a member at True Story FM. And you get them a week early, and you get some extra special bonus content, which is usually just us bullshitting, added
on a topic. On a topic.
On a topic, yes. And I'm going to surprise you with today's topic.
Okay, I've got a good backup one if you're sex.
Okay. Okay, it might suck, but you have to become a member to find out what it is and whether or not it sucks. So go to truestory.fm and become a member today. We appreciate you so much. And while you're out there in the world, remember to keep the most excellent 80s movies motto in mind. Be excellent to each other and
party on, dudes.
Yay. We had it all on UHF.